For March the 24th, 2017, we talk about Little Big Planet 3, the Mass Effect Andromeda animation controversy, and we ask you about your favorite women in games. Welcome to Level 189. My name is Cole Ross.
I'm Dennis Furia.
I'm Jella Prendes.
I'm Ben Merkel.
And you are listening to The Level. It's a podcast for people who love video games. Let's see here. What can we banter about at the top? Duck Spring was this past weekend, and all of us participated in some way. Ben, I saw you in the chat a lot.
Yeah. Ben was there, and he saw me go crazy on all the fools when I was playing Dishonored 2. It was great fun.
Throwing them into trees.
Yeah. and then those villagers got mad when I pulled the beer tap, and then like everybody came after me, and I died. And I was like, "Hey, can't a man get a beer? Killing's thirsty work." It was a great, chaotic, fun time. I played a little bit more recklessly than I normally do, but
that's the thing, isn't it?
The commentary is all my usual type of commentary, and a listener told me, who also watched it, that it sounded to him very much as if it were the level. So I don't know how that worked. A one person level, and it's just Jala. But, you know, that's cool. So people have an interest in me continuing that crazy chaotic game, so I will probably be continuing that playthrough on my own channel when I can work it into my schedule. So pay attention to @Jalachan in places, and I will post about it when I do it.
Yeah.
We got Phil Holmes to do an off-roading in the American Truck Simulator too. So.
awesome. There
was much chaos.
I couldn't watch it live, and like I couldn't watch most of it live. I caught bits, but I have like a whole queue of stuff to watch on YouTube because it is archived on YouTube. So
yeah, huge ups to huge ups to Sporky for organizing all of that, getting so many. We need to go and get like a final total of how many people were involved in it, but that is ridiculous that we managed to make this happen. But also huge ups to Z Chocobo for archiving stuff and like pulling highlights and things like that.
God, yeah.
Like
I will say, like as a host on this network, I have never been so happy to have something spiral out of my control. This was in so many people's hands that like are, you know, just fans of the network pitching in, I don't know. It's awesome. If you had any part in it, watching, donating, streaming, you guys are awesome.
Yeah.
You had a point, I think, and I jumped in there.
to who, Jala or me?
To you.
Oh yeah. And it was fantastic to see that. Everybody who made jokes about me being a serial killer, you're gonna be getting an individual visit sometime in the very near future.
Cole, during my stream, because I was going crazy and killing everybody psychotically, like they were like, the real serial killer is Jala. Cole is just a front. So that was a thing that happened in the chat anyway. But
I'm the person that the detectives go to at the end of the second act. Like, oh, yeah. we've got the case. We're going to get them. But then it turns out that I'm dead and you're standing over my body because I left too many loose ends.
It's all that axe throwing, Cole, from your Hitman game.
I never threw an axe. That was a huge axe. Okay. I threw fire extinguishers.
But it's
fun to play.
I caught bits.
It's fun to play stream like on streams like that, especially both of us, Jala. We did stealth games. I'll talk about it during the grind. I don't want to burn that because it's really all that I have. But like you're absolutely right. You do play more. I don't know, more boldly. You're trying to be more entertaining. You're going to do stuff like I'm just going to save and see what happens because there could be a fun little bit of chaos as opposed to just casing the joint and like pulling a Dennis. Okay, I'm going to stand up and walk from side to side.
I totally like Ben can vouch for me. I totally wasn't even playing as if it was a stealth game, so it's fine.
Yeah.
But when I played through the first time, I was sneaky, and then I would just randomly go into my erratic murder spree and then go back to normal again and calm down. Yeah. But, you know, I was just like in murder spree mode the whole time.
High chaos. High Chaos Jet Dishonored is its own thing.
Yep.
And I don't know about you guys, but I basically had a big gulp of margarita while streaming, and that got me inebriated enough to think that bourbon was a good idea. So,
oh god,
you just moved up the brownness scale for liquors.
Yeah. Let me just shift that slider to the left.
No,
that's what we
sliders.
Call a brownout.
Yeah.
Oh gosh, yeah, you did do an evening stream. I was very happy that I wrangled myself an 8 a.m. Slot.
Oh, it was glorious. I think it ended with me yelling at Brutus for not being Denver.
I caught part of your stream too, so like I didn't catch when you were all drunk and shit, but I had coffee during mine because mine was like mid-afternoon after I had gone to a belly dance workshop but before I started other projects. Mm-hmm. So it just kind of got squished in the middle there. But yeah, like Denver is a giant Digimon looking T-Rex looking motherfucker, and like there is an old cartoon that was called Denver the Last Dinosaur, and it spazzed me out when he told me that this dinosaur's name was Denver. So if you have not seen Denver the Last Dinosaur, go look on YouTube at it. It's terrible. You
know, it's the kind of game where I would not be surprised at all if that was a reference.
Yeah, so. I mean, it couldn't have been just coincidental.
This is a cool dinosaur. Look at his shades and his flying V guitar.
Shades, yeah, this skateboard and guitar.
This is going in the show notes, guys.
That's why they went extinct. They were too good to live. This world didn't deserve them.
They lived fast and died prehistorically. Yeah. Huh.
But yeah, it was such a good time.
Yeah, Ben, you watched more of it than I did. Do you have any like call outs for other streams or other sessions where cool shit happened?
Let's see. I mean, I was doing a lot of multitasking, so I was also playing a game while I was watching a bunch of them. I played some of the Jackbox, and that was fun. But that's always fun. Yeah. This will probably be something I mentioned in the grind too, but there was a game that I watched that I really liked, and I liked it enough to buy it and play it myself. So that'll be a foreshadowing, I think. So, yeah.
Oh, and everybody in Kyle's FTL crew died except for Jala.
Oh yeah. So,
that's more proof that I am the killer.
I was he named one of them after me, and there was one part where there's a decision where it was like you choose which person, you choose like shirts or something like that. You either send the red person with the red shirt or you send the person with the blue shirt or something like pick the red wire, pick the blue wire. I was telling him not to pick the red one because that's when people die in Star Trek.
Right.
You pick the red one and then Ben died. So.
You should have told him.
I said, what did you do? Yeah.
FTL knew you knew.
That's pretty awesome.
Yeah. So thanks so much everybody for donating. I'm still looking at the final total. It's over 4,000. It is tremendous. It blew past the goal, nearly doubled it. It looks like.
Yeah. Yep.
No, just tremendous. I can't believe how much support. You all managed to muster and bring together and kind of turn it into a big party.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was a lot of fun, and I have to say that like. I had it on in the background when I was working just to listen to it when Sporky and people were all playing Chrono Trigger. And then now I've got the battle music stuck in my head thanks to hours of Chrono Trigger in the background. But yeah, like it was so much fun. And I still have all of these archives to go back and watch for all the parts I missed. But it's kind of like, oh, man. It's over with. I have to go back and watch all the archives now because I don't want it to be over. So.
Nice. Cool.
Yeah.
Well, did anything else banter worthy happen over the past week?
I registered for Camp Gladiator Games. my trainer guy said this morning, yeah, so if we can talk Jala into staying, she would be great for Camp Gladiator Games. And I swiveled my head and went, what? What is the thing that you're speaking of right now? Like, when is it? And what exactly do you do during this thing? And then I looked it up, and it basically looks like a Spartan race minus the mud. And I'm like, oh, perfect. Good training. And I told him to up the difficulty level of the training for me specifically. So now it's now going to be hard mode every time I go to camp. And his job is to try to kill me, and my job is to try to make it hard for him to kill me. So
my job is to kill him back.
Yep. Got to make his job harder. So.
Well, that's great. Yeah.
So I'm jazzed about that. Anyway, that's all.
Yeah. Well, why don't we get started with the show? We've got the usual kind of thing for you, the brief, the multiplayer, and the grind, and why don't we get started with...
The Brief.
The Brief, where we talk about things that are happening in the world of video games around us. Dennis and Ben, I know you have a big one that you want to get to, or at least you both share a story. Want to save that one for the end. Let's bury the lead just a little bit. Jala, what is this that you have brought to us with the Echoes, Fire Emblem Echoes?
Fire Emblem Echoes Shadows of Valentia is going to have a special edition that will release for $60 and will come out in May. It's going to have a hardcover art book, audio CD, pin set, and reversible cover. And since the base game is $40, that's not all that much more to get a bunch of cool stuff. So it's also there's also going to be two new amiibo, Alm and Celica, and they're going to be sold separately, but they will activate their own exclusive dungeons within the game, so they are actually going to be compatible with all the new amiibos.
Yeah.
You can have them level up and earn loot via a menu from the overworld map, or you can use them as a summon to get illusions of them in the battle with you for a single turn based on the amiibo stats. But also, Super Smash Amiibo will also work. So you can summon Marth, Ike, Roy, Robin, Lucina, and Corrin.
Okay.
So, and then there's also apparently all amiibo will summon a monster. I don't know. So I guess you have to buy all of those amiibo and then, you know, like summon all of them together and then,
and then have a monster party.
So,
yeah.
Yeah, have a monster party. So I don't know. That sounds interesting. And I kind of want to know more about this all amiibo thing, but.
Yeah,
you know,
it sounds a little bit like a almost like a Monster Rancher kind of thing. Like if you happen to have this amiibo, you can press this down and get a little monster friend.
Yeah,
can I be vulnerable with you guys for a second?
Sure.
I still have no clue what the hell an amiibo is.
It's
like a little figure. There's like a virtual equivalent in some games, right?
Are you are you familiar with like Skylanders? Any other toy that happens to interface with an electronic thing?
Vaguely, yes.
It literally is just a little Nintendo figurine that has an RFID chip in the bottom of it that when you press it against certain Nintendo hardware, if the game supports it, will cause some kind of special thing to pop up. So, like, if you have a Link amiibo and you're playing Super Mario Maker, you can cause your Mario to turn into a little 8-bit Link.
See, no, I know it can't be that, though, because if that's all it was, people wouldn't be going as ape shit for them as everyone seems to go. So
you would think.
I'm just very confused as to the nature of what it... Maybe I need to own one before I get it. Maybe it's like, you know, I have to be there, but...
Yeah.
Apparently with like the Xbox One, people spend so much money in their avatars, like more so than actual games. So it's just a thing, man.
Yeah.
Oh. If I get a what are those, like the Pop-It toys or the
Funko Pop things?
Funko Pop, yeah. Is that an amiibo? Is that
if you take one of the RFID chips out of an amiibo and put it into that, it would function much like an amiibo.
So I just have to push it hard enough into the controller is what I'm hearing.
Right. I just really slam it in there. if it's cracking, you're on the right path.
Okay. I think I've got a grasp on it. Yes.
Yeah.
Okay.
Man, so here's the thing about Fire Emblem. Like I read about this, I always hear everybody say, "Hey, Fire Emblem is some next level shit. I like tactical role-playing games like this. I desperately want to get into it." However, it almost always seems like more of a commitment or an investment that I'm willing to make at any given time. So any given Fire Emblem game is one that I'll be interested in, but then I will find out about the next one before I'm able to actually sit down and go for it. So I might say, well, I'll just wait for this one.
it's a length and on a release cycle that makes it practically impossible to play as an adult.
I'm maybe, but I know plenty of adults who play it. It makes it impossible to play it as a me. Yeah, but like,
fair enough.
But yeah, like this is just a crunchy ass 3DS turn-based strategy game that I would desperately like to play. But I guess if I desperately wanted to, I would make time for it. But I just want to know what these names are. There are so many proper names, and I have no idea what their deal is.
I don't know.
But it's cool that they're leaning into a physical release like that.
Yeah, they are. And then it's also cool that they're making them compatible with other amiibo that are not the ones specifically from the game, but also, you know, Smash amiibos. Those are cool.
So. That's pretty cool. Any objections to me moving on to this one? Because it's also going to be pretty brief. Yeah. So file this one under, this is going to exist somewhere and I want it to exist here. Square Enix has announced that they are releasing this gigantic collection of Mana games for the Switch. So Final Fantasy Adventure and then Seiken Densetsu 1 and 2, or I guess 2 and 3. Sorry, I get messed up. But think Final Fantasy Adventure, The Secret of Mana, and The Secret of Mana 2 here in the States are being re-released as this gigantic, you know, kind of $40 package for the Nintendo Switch, which seems like a wonderful use case for that particular piece of hardware. It's confirmed for Japan, but we never got an official translation of Seiken Densetsu 3. So who knows if that's ever going to actually come here. And I am upset and jealous by that. So they're going to be playing this in June, and I am not.
We can only hope. Add one more to the pile of things that you need to be translated to bring here.
Yeah.
Go to Japan, dude.
Yeah, but there's a language I need to learn. Yeah. Oh, well. Does anybody else have...
Oh, my God.
Oh, good.
So I don't... I'm going to start digging now. I don't have a news link for it yet, but I have a different story than Ben. So, Ben, do your story. I'm going to dig real quick for the thing that just came to mind, and I'll talk about that.
Yeah, Ben, let's throw over to you. Tell me about Mass Effect's janked faces.
Yeah, no, I felt like it was a pretty slow week for news, so this is the story I'm going with. Mass Effect Andromeda has weird facial animations. There's a lot of funny GIFs of them. That's about it. They have weird walking animations too. I don't know how much further I can dig on that story, but I don't know. Watch them online.
I mean, here's my thought that was why I was going to talk about it. Is it's such an interesting conundrum that with this next generation, we seem to have made big leaps in making things look prettier, but it seems to be difficult for people to get them to move prettier. I mean, I talked about Horizon Zero Dawn has a couple facial animations that are pretty cringeworthy. Thankfully, as I've progressed in the game, it's clear that they saved their effort on animation for the A-Team, or, you know, the main characters. Mm-hmm. So as I've discovered more of them, it's like, oh, okay, this is good. The random side quests where everything looked janky was probably because they got the B team or couldn't spend as much time on it or whatever. But still, at first brush, you would say it would be easier to get things moving in a natural way because that's not dependent on graphics. And that's a problem that people have been able to work on for a lot longer than visuals. And so it's kind of surprising to me to see this big leap in visuals and these characters that in stills look amazing. But yet the facial animations are just really, really robotic.
There's also another funny video where they compare like the 2007 Mass Effect animations to the 2017 animations. Of course, it could be cherry picking of, you know, picking the worst from this and the best from that. But yeah, it is kind of funny.
Yeah. I mean, what it looks like, and I'm no expert, I have no insight into the way this is put together. It seems like some kind of weird merge between kind of like captured animation and also kind of like hand keyframed bespoke animation, right? Mm-hmm. Like, okay, we're gonna do both of these. Both of them are necessary. Just because you have mocap, it doesn't mean that, hey, all of a sudden animators don't have a job. In fact, it requires a more specialized skill set to kind of blend those and make them feel natural. It seems like something that should have been weeded out in testing because it is incredibly apparent, and it's not like everybody involved in the project, you know, at every level, because this is a huge team, has the tunnel vision that would lead you to say, oh yeah, that's fine, that's good, that's how it's always been.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think it feels like one of those things where like they they shipped it out to a third party, and the third party like kept it, you know, overpromised and then kept it hidden until it was too late to actually fix.
Yeah.
And I'll admit that, like, with facial animations, like, perhaps people are making a bigger deal out of it than it should be. Like, if you're just, like, not even paying too close of attention to the game, you might not even realize that everything's very kind of robotic. but, I mean, some of the walking animations are kind of ridiculous. But I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know where I'm going with this.
It's, you know, Mass Effect Andromeda, by reading reviews, it has enough issues that it makes me want to wait until it's a little bit cheaper to buy. I mean, and this is me, I love Mass Effect. People are making a pretty big deal out of it. This leads into kind of another related but kind of unrelated story, like, hey, guess what's back in POG form? Gamergate.
Because
some people online singled out a woman who worked on the game, claimed that she was the lead animator on that because of some kind of weird bio blurb on social networking, and said, hey, this is the person who ruined your sci-fi power fantasy, go get her. Enough so that BioWare to come out and say, hey, like, this is stupid, nobody should do this, also you have the wrong person, we all share responsibility for this and we're doing what we can. So just in case you thought like things were better at all, there you go, they got the band back together.
Unfortunately.
Sorry, I'm desperately trying to mute when my dog barks.
People like hearing pets. It's okay.
I should bring my bird in.
So I think one of the points of the story is BioWare said that they weren't going to do a day one patch for the animations. So I don't know if that means they're not going to work at it at all eventually, but at least there's not plans to fix it in the short term.
Yeah.
So, whatever.
Seems like a big thing to do to reanimate your game.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, that's a shame.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Shame all around. Dennis, do you have a story?
Yeah, I'll bring us back up with something uplifting. Although I'm furiously, I know I saw this in my Twitter timeline yesterday, so I will just scroll back and find it. Like, how hard could it be? I've been scrolling furiously since Ben started talking, and I'm only to 6 hours ago. So I officially have too much content. And Googling for this is kind of difficult. Anyway, it's a nice just little story in a nutshell, but someone posted that, you know, hey, I finished Breath of the Wild. I was watching the credits, and, you know, every single name was Japanese except for one. And it kind of stuck out like a sore thumb, so they just thought, oh, I'll Google it and see what comes up. And the only hit for this thing online was a message board from, like, you know, 7 years ago, where some kid had posted, like, hey, I'm about to graduate high school, and my dream is to go to Japan and try to make games for Nintendo. But, you know, I don't know the language, and I don't know how I would do it. Does anyone have advice? And so it's just this nice little, you know, nugget of story that here's this kid's dream coming true. They've actually made it through and got onto the Japanese development team for Breath of the Wild.
I believe he does the animal animations on the game.
Hmm.
Do you have the link to this story?
I saw it on Reddit.
I just plopped it into the Slack as well. The animator's name is Corey Burnell.
Oh, you guys are better at Google than me.
I just Googled Breath of the Wild English credit.
Interesting. I Googled Breath of the Wild English dev, which did not turn results back. But okay, there we go. Yeah. So, kudos to you, Corey Burnell. That is awesome and a nice little just kind of stumbled upon feel good story.
Yeah, you went out and made it happen.
Mm-hmm.
That's awesome.
Yeah. So too might we all one day work on Breath of the Wild. No way.
I'm just hoping to play it. I'm hoping to get a Switch this week. In fact, I'm going to be calling around tomorrow afternoon because that is when people think they're going to be coming back in stock. I wanted to secure my copy of Breath of the Wild, so I ordered my copy on Amazon. It took forever to get here because that is also like spotty and, you know, like in stock. So it got here today. And what's the first thing that you do with a Switch game when you don't have a Switch to play it on? Well, you put your tongue on it, dummy.
Oh, yeah.
You put your tongue on it because of that bittering agent they cover it with. So I'm going to give you a review of the taste of Breath of the Wild.
Wait, is this happening live?
No, this happened earlier today. I thought about doing it live, but I got too impatient. So all I did was I put the tip of my tongue on the corner of it. Like, I didn't give it a good, like, I'm licking a toad and I'm going to get real fucked up kind of like. just kind of like, yep, did a dab there. It wasn't immediately obnoxious, right? Like, mm-hmm. it's kind of like, oh, like there's something. It tastes, you know, like it's covered in factory chemicals or whatever. But over the course of the next 3 hours, my mouth tasted like let's say ate a lit cigarette. it was really bad. So the fact that it was like it feels ineffective, because if it's not immediately, hey, this is poison, it's not going to get somebody to spit it out. All it does is punish somebody for swallowing your video game whole.
Maybe you got to do a bigger dab. We should try that on there.
No.
I'm all about bigger dabs. You guys can't see it, but I just shoved my face into the crook of my elbow.
Of course. I
just listened today to the Monster in My podcast where you were trying to explain what dabbing was to Gary.
I'm doing it based on third-hand information. I had no idea what dabbing was until I watched the My Brother and Me TV show.
and then you did a really good job, because after I listened to you, I went and looked it up. And I looked at a photo of it and I was like, a good job.
He painted me a word picture.
A word picture of dabbing.
Noted serial killer and dab expert Cole Roth.
Multiplayer.
Now it is time for the multiplayer, where we ask you a question and you answer it. Dennis, what is the question that you asked the nice people?
Yeah, I thought I'd get people's thoughts on their favorite women in games, which could either be a character or a developer, so real life or created. That's the long and short of it.
Yeah. So let's go for it. Gonna start out with Jonathan, who writes, Shepard from Mass Effect. Jennifer Hale brought gravitas and passion to the performance that the male actor could not. She was always trying to light a fire under people's asses to save themselves. Funny side note, my gaming group started playing Wildlands last night. I generally pick a female model, and the other guys had to pick who got to be the other female, leaving the other two relegated to male. You know, for equality reasons. Wait, so you were all fighting over the ladies?
Woohoo!
Nice. Very cool. Yep, Femme Shep is great. Jennifer Hale is a treasure.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Man, Andromeda coming out has gotten me thinking about Mass Effect again. I'm worried to go back, because I'm worried that, like, the magic is going to be gone.
Just go play 2 again.
Yeah. I don't know. Jala, what does Greg say?
Greg says, I'll have to second Shepard from Mass Effect for the same reasons, along with Samus from Metroid, Lara Croft from Tomb Raider, and Bastila from Star Wars Knights of the Old Republic. All of them are strong in character and spirit, have complex personalities, and are pretty without being over-sexual, at least with Samus in her old versions and Lara in the new ones. As for developers, I'm a huge fan of Carol Shaw's work, a pioneer in the early days of the making of video games. He's been reading a book about, like, the old school stuff lately. So, you know, he's getting more and more acquainted with all of the old school developers.
Yeah.
So, Greg, you should have told us what Carol Shaw did, because I don't know who that is.
Carol Shaw is a big name. She was one of Atari's star developers who left along with what's his name, Jimmy Pitfall. God, why am I forgetting his name?
I don't know dev's names like at all. But
she left in order to be one of the initial founders of Activision when Atari ended up being a bad place to work, and they wanted to be in an environment where kind of visionary devs like her would be able to kind of make the games that they wanted to make. Looking up here, she did River Raid was one of her first names. Was one of her first games way back when. Yeah, the early history of Activision is pretty great. I'm going to drop a link to a Retronauts episode where they dove into the Activision in the 80s. It was very cool to listen to.
Not cool. To be confused with activism in the 80s.
Right. Well, yeah, those are cool too. We talk about those a lot. Ben, who is next? What does Sam
Samuel
say?
Samuel says, off the top of my head, I'm going to say Lori Ann Cole, who is one of the lead creators of the Quest for Glory series. They're easily my favorite adventure games growing up because they didn't feel as on-rails as Sierra's other games and gave you the sense of building a character over several games to tell a larger story. We don't talk about Quest for Glory 5 Dorito Monsters.
yeah.
Honorable mention goes to Jane Jensen, although I didn't play any Gabriel Knight until those showed up on WoF.
Yeah, I mean, better late than never. I didn't play Gabriel Knight until we did it for WoF either. Yeah. So go for it. You did it. Yep, Jane Jensen's great. I haven't played her recent stuff, though, which is something I feel like I need to correct. Dennis, what does Jason say?
Jason says, having just completed the main story in Horizon Zero Dawn, I'll pick Aloy. Growing up an outcast, she is perfectly willing to live on without the society that shunned her. However, the mystery of her parentage thrusts her back into civilization and puts her in the role of hero, even when most people still don't want the help of someone they still ostracize. She wrecks with the bow and isn't afraid to take on much of anything, be it a giant robot or an evil cult. I love how she lets her actions speak for her and put people who doubt her in their place. Yeah, Aloy is was going to be my answer, so I'll tag on to that. Just an excellent character all around. Even though they give you the option to choose how to respond as her, and like, you know, do you use your brain, do you use your heart, do you use your strength? Just overall, she comes across really well.
Yeah. Did they call her Aloy as a direct homage to the Time Machine?
That is a... Ooh.
Say more.
No, just there were the two races, the Morlocks who were pushed, the underclass who were pushed down into the ground to live in their sewer societies and got strong, whereas the intelligentsia, the Aloy, Eloi, I think, they stayed above ground and worked on academics, and part of the struggle was the underclass rose up and took down those wiry Aloy nerds.
So I thought it was just a letter away from Aloy, because she's both like old school and she has technology to be like part of the machine, part of the world. She also has like an older person named Rost, which is a letter away from Rust. Oh. And so I thought it was just like poor name calling, but maybe it's smarter than that. So
I assumed it was, Aloy said funny, but I have not finished the plot of the game, and there is this mystery about what happened to, civilization before, which is, ancient history. I don't think it involves time travel, but there is something to do with like vaults that apparently contain people during the end times Fallout style. So maybe, and I'm saying this not knowing the actualities of any of it. So not spoiler territory, just interesting that phonetically it's the same as something from the Time Machine, which could be pointing towards something. I don't know.
I don't know either. I was more just musing. It sounds like there may be something there. Danny writes, my favorite woman in games is in games probably has to be, as far as characters go at least, Rose of Sharon Cassidy. He's referring to a female NPC in the old Fallout New Vegas. You find her at a bar drinking and wasting her time since her destroyed caravan is stuck in bureaucratic hell. And when you go to pay off the contract she's under, she essentially shrugs and says, I've got nothing better to do, and follows you. She doesn't take anyone's shit and doesn't even fall into the normal video game trap of hardness with a soft side for the PC. Cass drinks, smokes, and does as she pleases, regardless of how others feel about it. As for real humans, I have to second the love for Jennifer Hale. Lord knows she's in enough stuff that it's not hard to find something that she's in that you like.
Very true.
Yep, and that goes for any kind of voice acting, any voice medium. And I cannot recommend it enough to go listen to I Know That Voice, because she's in that as well.
So not
go listen, go watch, I mean. Unless that's what I said, in which case, carry on. Jala, what does Michael say?
Michael says, Lady Arabeth from Neverwinter Nights 1. She has all the great hallmarks of a good female lead. Strong character, a good head on her shoulders, not sexualized, etc. Her character arc is one of my favorites because it explores what would happen if a paladin was faced with a realistic law system. influenced by politics, the law takes her takes something dear away from her. Over the course of the game, you watch as she slowly loses faith in the concept of justice. When she finally decides to fight the corrupt system, she is killed by the main character, ironically proving her point about justice bulldozing everyone in its way.
Yeah.
Good stuff.
I have not played enough Neverwinter Nights 1 to comment further on that. But I believe what you say. Yeah. Ben, what does Graham say? Sorry, we just kind of passed over it, but I don't have the...
Our listeners are probably not liars.
So. I just want to keep them on their toes.
Graham says, the boss from Metal Gear Solid 3 is one of my favorite video game females. She's intelligent, has strong convictions, and her personality is detailed and broad. She doesn't really have any flaws, and if you ask me, one of my peeves with female characters in fiction is that many of them don't have flaws or never struggle with their ambitions. But something about MGS's whimsy makes all the bosses' reverence and godliness work. Come to think of it, Ash from Final Fantasy VII has a decent arc about doing away with the desires of vengeance to actually grow as a person over the course of the story.
Yeah. Final Fantasy XII, Ash from Final Fantasy.
Oh,
yeah.
Sorry.
Yeah. Just want to make sure nobody got curious because you said that. I immediately flash her all the character portraits from Final Fantasy VII. Yeah.
Your
numerals
there.
Are hard. Yeah.
The boss is only flawless when you know the ending, though.
Yeah.
Do you think so? I mean, like, you know, the first time you see her, she betrays America. Like,
the boss is a good character. I've got to totally second that one.
Yeah.
Yeah. That was on my list as well.
Love the boss. Yep. And then that's one of the best boss fights in games, too.
Yeah, she doesn't get the same... Yeah, whatever.
What?
There's like a poor costume choice for the last battle, kind of, I thought, maybe.
Yeah. But whatever. I would need to go and take a look, because I can only picture her in that kind of Snow White camo that she's in.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. She rips that apart in the last boss fight.
Oh. Yeah, Kojima.
Well, because reasons.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Because of paper thin reasons.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah. When she's talking about. Okay. Yep. Yeah.
Well, it's kind of like, you know, we had that whole conversation about quiet.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah.
Anyway.
She's
let's
not.
Move
she's
on.
Not. The, she's not the quiet.
Yeah.
Dennis, what does David say?
David says, Celeste from Final Fantasy VI. See, Ben, you got me worried about those Roman numerals. at 18, she's already a general in the Empire, successfully controls the powers she gains from Magitek infusion, and is an accomplished fighter. Has the morals to realize that what the Empire is doing is wrong, and that the leadership to get the party back together after ruin. Whoa.
Yeah, no, you're right.
Okay,
it's a 25-year-old game, man.
Yeah,
not quite that old, but it is a very old game.
Oh no, sorry, I read that with weird inflections. She has the morals, blah blah blah, and the leadership to get the party back together after the ruin. There
yes.
we go.
Yeah.
And she has the chops to impersonate an opera star and trick a cheater with a two-headed coin.
Yep.
Good stuff.
Yep, Cells is great. I loved when she came into her own in the second act, because Terra's story was kind of over.
Mm-hmm.
I wish that in these JRPGs everybody didn't have to be like in their teens. I'm not trying to make some kind of point with that, but like you go back and even look at Resident Evil 1, completely different thing. What's her name, Jill Valentine, is like a special forces operative and a master pianist. Chris Redfield is is an ace in the Air Force, all this stuff, and they're both like 21 years old.
Yeah.
<It's> like,
what are you doing with your life?
Well, they could be prodigies. They could be prodigies, or it could just be okay to put a 28-year-old in your fucking game.
Yeah. Well, at least they knew older. They were at least they eventually got older, and you know, like,
yeah,
and got
complicated.
Yeah.
Yes, I would say though that there's now a trend where there's a lot of grizzled old veterans in games.
Well, that's because the developers are growing up.
Yeah.
Let's see. This is you, Dennis, for Jaden? No, this is me for Jaden, I think. Yeah. Jaden says, Lammy from Jammer Lammy comes to mind first. I can definitely empathize with a character who wakes up with 15 minutes to get somewhere important, and everything in the world wants to get in the way of a timely arrival. Yet no matter what happens, she just keeps moving forward to get where she wants to be. I have never played Jammer Lammy. I don't have a TV that it will work on, but I have a copy of it. So
what is it? I'm Googling it right now.
Jammer Lammy is a sequel / spinoff to Parappa the Rapper. It is more oriented toward rock music. And just like Parappa the Rapper, it has some real cool and surreal kind of stages, including Lammy going to hell and fighting the devil version of herself, Rammy. Yeah.
This is interesting. I wonder if I think her name is Ash from the movie Sing.
I think you're thinking of Final Fantasy 12.
No. I think you're thinking of Final Fantasy 7.
No, damn it. V's and X's. No. There was the movie Sing about the, you know, people who sang. It was animated. It was a kid's movie. That's why I know.
Was that the Penguin movie? What?
No, it was a Koala. Sister Act? Yes, there you go. It was Sister Act. That's what I'm thinking of. Anyway,
in the Habit?
I had a point in here somewhere.
Was it Sister Act 3, Rosary's Baby?
Oh, God. There's a character from a kid's movie that looks kind of like the sprite from Jammer Lammy.
Was it Sister Act 4, Get Rectory? So anyway, I don't know what you're talking about. And I was too busy thinking of that stuff to listen to what you're saying.
There was nothing of
distract fun. Puns are more important, sorry.
But I know there's a movie called Sing. Yeah, it's got animals in it.
It's got animals. Well, it was a porcupine, and she's kind of like a rock star and looks a little like vaguely recalls Jammer Lammy.
Yeah.
Or Lammy.
Yeah. Let's see, Jala, what does Christopher say?
Chris says, I have to put my vote in for both Max and Chloe from Life is Strange, all based on their friendship with each other and how it grows throughout the entire game, which made the part where Redacted happened even more difficult to play through.
I'm sure it was a very good and happy thing that happened.
Yeah, it was. It was just so hard. It's, you know, it's hard to see people be happy. It's hard to know you're going to move on. Mm-hmm. Oh, yep. Life is Strange is good. I'm very happy that I made the time to play it last year. Yeah. Ben, what does Chris say?
Chris says, Luca from Chrono Trigger. She's never really a victim and numerous times helps, maybe even saves Chrono.
Yeah. And plays a very important role for making the sequel possible.
Yep. See, this is all stuff that was talked about during the stream during Duck Spring.
So in that weird fan remake, they named Luca Cole, and then at one point she shoots somebody in the back, thus providing more evidence for this cockamamie conspiracy theory that people are operating under.
Which will soon die off, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, right. Again, like I said, individual visits in short order. And then finally, Dennis, why don't you read some of Gwillem's?
Yeah, Gwillem says, Moira Burton is great. She's the perfect survival horror protagonist. For one thing, she engages in creative, elaborate swearing. A terror symptom that games often ignore. But she's also legitimately headstrong. I know that's a filler buzzword for character descriptions, but it feels 100% right here. Even her fears and traumas come out in a way that shows self-knowledge and self-advocacy. Within the opening 10 minutes, she's refusing to use a gun. Has any other protagonist done that? She's not even apologetic or anything. She's just like, nope. Despite this strength, she's still terrified. So she comes across like a regular, vulnerable human, no more powerful or fearless than any of us. Barry's long been the secret star of the series, despite being absent from nearly all of it. So it's good to see the Burton bloodline is in good hands. It might be in other parts of her body, too. I don't know. I'm not a doctor. Speaking of her body, part of me kind of wishes she was a huge bear like her dad. But her being the exact opposite works, too. Besides, Barry's not really been truly massive since the 90s. Maybe he was wearing prosthetics back then. We know the beard was fake at least. That's why it vanished for the HD version. It just didn't look convincing in high def. Oh, this is all Resident Evil Revelations 2, by the way. I'd have put the name in the first sentence, but it's so cumbersome that it would have ruined everything else. 10 syllables? Get out of here.
Get out of here.
That's fantastic.
Yeah.
Well written.
Yeah. No, she's indeed great. She's Claire's kind of co-op partner, and she will, the person who plays as her uses a flashlight to highlight enemies to make them easier to hit or also to find items. It's like a really cool kind of asymmetrical co-op.
Cool.
Nice.
Yeah. Let's go around and do ours. Mine is going to be super predictable, so I will get it out of the way. Let us just say, Heather from Silent Hill 3. I was going to say Heather Mason, but that's her name. No, that's not too much of a spoiler anymore. Yeah, Heather, just because she is a teenage protagonist who falls under pretty much none of the stereotypes about that, is never completely played for this vulnerable, helpless person, takes her fate into her own hands, spits in the face of any men or other people who try and use her body for their own kind of twisted needs as this as part of this cult, has like a history of being kind of a bad girl who breaks the rules, but still is willing to go to incredible lengths to help her family or avenge them, as the case might be. Heather is amazing. I love Heather as a character.
Heather.
I think
I'm going to jump in with the exact same rationale for Ellie from The Last of Us. Just rewind it like 20 seconds and same rationale, I think. I'll also do a call out to XCOM, not the main characters in the game, but I like that they treat the soldiers pretty equally. There's not really any differentiation between them.
Yeah. Cool. Let's see. Jala, how about you?
Well, honestly, I don't know if it's because I'm tired or what. I just can't really think off the top of my head of any characters in recent memory that really struck me as like, man, these are like the best ever. And I, as I already said, I don't know anybody's name when it comes to developers unless I've actually interacted with them personally.
Yeah.
So I'm just going to talk about the two characters that I attached to back when I was a teenager, which, you know, like that's the time that you really need role models or something. So, first, let me say that in the first Lunar game, all of the female characters will kick the asses of the male characters when they all lose hope during the game. And it's the women who drag the men, you know, off their asses when they think that they're beat and say, no, you got to snap the fuck out of it. We got to go and take care of business. You know, like we got stuff to do. And so that was awesome because, you know, that's not the way it usually works out. Like that's not like, at least not in video games. I mean, maybe in life, but not in video games, you know? Jessica from Lunar 1 is a priestess who also uses claws as a weapon, and she is your strongest party member for a pretty long stint right at the beginning when you first get her. And then when they remade the game, I think they made her pretty viable all the way up to end game. But she's also sensitive and fiery at the same time. She has a temper. She's a half beast, half human. And, you know, she's really caring, really loving, you know, but also, you know, short tempered and strong. So, I really like her character. And Mia from the same game, she's quiet. She's the kind of the opposite. She's quiet. She's reserved. She's kind of on the shy and depressed end of the spectrum, but she ends up having to take over the Magic Guild of Vayne and has to have like a one-on-one showdown with this giant magical fortress that's like, you know, threatening her city and her people. And, you know, like she shows her strength as the game progresses for sure. So those characters were awesome. And then in Lunar 2, Jean, she's a dancer, a ninja warrior, and a strong-willed character that's also a caring mentor figure, like a big sister type. So, you know, she was kind of the equivalent in that game for me. And the only thing I could think of for like anything I've played in the last several years that I just popped out to me was Anna from Planescape Torment.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
Just because she's, you know, kind of the same thing where she's caring, but she's fiery, but she, you know, she's a solid character with, you know, like her own intricacies that I like.
Has her own history with the character that's, you know, not what you would expect.
Yep.
Yeah, it's great. That's a lot of good examples.
Yeah.
Cool. Yeah, I do want to give a shout out for the real dev person to Kelly Santiago, who is or was the president of that game company.
Oh, yeah.
And so worked on Flow and Flower and Journey and just some really quality stuff. And she's now at Google Play Games helping with their kind of development platform.
Good catch. So,
awesome.
Loved everything that she's touched. Yeah, I feel like I need to circle back around to Aloy real quick, just because I tried to abbreviate it and I don't know if I made much sense. The thing that's really cool about her character is one, they walk a very thin tightrope of when you've got someone who was an outsider and then is suddenly like in society, it's very easy to fall on the side of either like, oh, I'm so innocent and then this is all so wondrous and I don't understand how this all works, or the other side of like, fuck your society, I don't give a shit for any of this and whatever. And so she walks a very convincing kind of middle ground where, you know, this is someone who's actually really good with people and has just never been able to exercise it, yeah. Kind of getting to experiment with that for the first time. And then it's especially impressive to the point that I made earlier because you're given chances to choose like the way she responds to stuff. But it doesn't feel like here, you know, choose here and she comes off as one character and choose the other option. It comes off as another character. It feels very holistic and it's like, This is one person that could take multiple routes to dealing with the situation, but it all feels cohesive with her character. So, yeah.
Nice.
Cool. And I just want to say that any representation of any dev that is not like a cis male is a good representation thing because, you know, like there are lots of women who are in the industry and there are lots of people of, you know, different gender presentations or who are minorities or whatever, like how, whatever it may be. And just any of that integrated. I mean, it's becoming more common now, but you know, for the longest time it was male dominated, male oriented. And, you know, like as we progress and we see a wider variety of people joining, you know, the game dev community, that's influenced games in a way that I feel is only positive at this point.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I'll point out here, this is somebody that I kind of only found out about recently. I played her game and recorded a video of it, thinking I was going to do it for Hex Rank, but that project fell by the wayside again. Fuck me. An artist who goes under the name Kitty Horror Show does these really kind of awesome, simple horror games that she funds entirely through Patreon. The one that I played is called Anatomy. It is a fantastic game, and she is incredibly prolific. So I would definitely point people toward her.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Good stuff.
But yeah, very well put, Jella.
Yay.
Yeah. Cool. So thank you everybody for writing in. Thank you, Dennis, for putting this question out there. If you would like to participate in these, go over to facebook.com/thelevelpodcast and watch for those to go up on Tuesday afternoons. Thanks to both Dennis and Jala.
Oh, wait. Okay. Oh. So Tim Moore, you owe me a beer. I refreshed the page right before we moved on and he has a comment that got added. So
okay.
I can just read it real quick.
You already started.
Yeah. Tim says, I think I missed the cutoff. No, you didn't. But I still want to say that Heather from Silent Hill 3 definitely comes to mind as a favorite of mine. Having her as the protagonist after Silent Hill 1 and 2 provided such a great contrast for the series. Her character was able to be tough, funny, but vulnerable, and gave us a completely different kind of lens to see the horror and themes of the universe through. She gets so many awesome F yeah moments and doesn't really let herself become the victim throughout the game. So, Cole, you got another tick mark in your column there.
High five, Frothy.
Woohoo! Mm-hmm.
Fantastic. Cool. Right under the wire. We let you in this time.
Just in time comment, Venturi.
Oh, that was the dorkiest thing I've ever heard, Dennis.
That is the dumbest thing I've ever said.
The grind. Now it is time for the grind, where we talk about the games we have been playing over the past week or so. Mine is going to be very simple because I've been doing a lot of assignment play, a lot of getting ready for this upcoming show that we're doing in Milwaukee. But I played Hitman during the Duck Spring.
Mm-hmm. Caught a little bit of it.
Yeah. So this is the first Hitman game that I've played since I got about halfway through Hitman Absolution. I have a little bit more time put in with Hitman Blood Money. But still, it is a hard game. It's a hard series to really be that fluent with, especially if you've been away from it for a very long time. It is a more, it is a more kind of like clockwork puzzle approach to stealth than something like I've played a lot recently, which is like Dishonored, which is not as puzzle like, and it's more like down to like individual situations. So there's plenty of visual evidence of me being a complete buffoon, which was kind of the
more
point.
Evidence. Yeah.
more evidence, which was kind of the point in picking that to play, because, you know, I hear on other podcasts about people streaming that and it being a good time. I'm like, hey, you know, let's just show this happening. Mm-hmm. And no surprise, you know, I believe you, Ben. I believe you played this and spoke about it a while back. It's a very good game.
Which Hitman is this?
This is Hitman, like, it's the most recent one.
It's Hitman, okay, Hitman.
Right. Yes, it is. It is all just right. Hitman. It's the one that began coming out episodically during the winter of last year, by which I mean like January of 2016.
This was something that I was confused about, because it said playing Hitman. I forgot that title was the same as the other one, so I thought it was like an updated version of the first game, and I was like, wow, the graphics are really good on that. They did a good job of updating that.
Yeah. But, well, technically they haven't repeated, because the first one was Hitman codename Agent 47 or something like that. But yeah, this is just Hitman. It's still a stupid title that will forever cause people to have to say Hitman 2016 after it.
Maybe the next one will just be called Agent, kind of like the Logan movie, to try and, I don't know.
Well, just to try and get around. Like, no, trust us, X-Men movies are good. Yeah.
Oh, man.
So I only got a chance to do like the tutorial, which is cool, because it is on a plywood copy of a boat.
Yeah.
It's like how do you beat that? What's that?
So maybe I need to go back and watch your stream, because I never beat that level, and so that's where I stopped with that game.
Oh, wow. No, I didn't do that on stream, because I wanted to do the tutorial, so I was fresh on it. The initial one walks you right through it, which was kind of one of my, I don't know, criticisms of the game. I know you can play it without the rails, but you can, mm-hmm. you can kind of totally bumper pool the game, and it does that on the first run through that tutorial, which is like, hey, you know, you should probably go and knock this person out or kill them, get their clothes, so you can get to here. Like, it walks you through all the systems.
Yeah.
Right.
So there's one part in it where it puts you in a room with somebody who's looking through a safe, and you're supposed to kill him, but I couldn't figure out a way to do that silently.
I didn't run into that.
All right. Well, shucks.
Must have been patched out.
It might not have been patched out. Like the kills, there are different opportunities that pop up throughout the course of like a certain amount of time in the level. Like, there are many different ways that you can approach this. Like, the mission you're talking about, the one that is like in the plywood copy of the Cuban base, like, I accomplished that one by rigging his escape jet to have a malfunctioning ejector seat, and then disguising myself as an airplane tech and walking him through the test so I could like launch him basically straight into the ceiling.
Nice.
Which, I mean, that's cool stuff. That is really cool stuff that Hitman kind of excels at, is these kind of ridiculous situations, you know. Mm-hmm. And like, it has always been the best when those situations have been funny, you know. Mm-hmm. and that kind of carries through. So there's a little bit of technical stuff. I thought I had the whole game downloaded, but no, I only had the first pack, so I couldn't go on from Paris to the Italy level, which is a bummer. Mm-hmm. Because I understand that one is fantastic. But no, I just did the Paris stuff over and over again. And I initially approached it by just trying to look around and find, you know, like, stalk the target and find ways to kill him and stuff. And this is a massive level. It is a huge mansion where the lower floor is crowded with these people who are attending a fashion show, and by the assistants and all the crew and stuff like that. The basement is full of like security personnel, and the upper floor is completely covered by really highly armed security who are covering this huge arms kind of auction that is happening on the side. Like, it's a gigantic, very intricate level. And I ended up, it ended up not being great to watch on the stream, because it was like, oh, which part of this massive level that is full of people will I find over here? So somebody in the chat, I think it was Allison, said, hey, use the opportunity system. That way you can kind of go through this more times and not just kind of go through it, which was a fantastic choice, because it got me to actually accomplish something as opposed to just dying ignominiously by throwing a fire extinguisher at somebody and then getting gunned down after I accidentally snap somebody else's neck. But these,
that's so ignominious.
But these opportunities, they will tell you, like, hey, here's the start of almost like a waypoint quest structure. So one of the first ones was like, hey, you look almost exactly like the star model of this show. So, like, go find this person, get him alone, kill him, disguise yourself in his clothes, get done up in his makeup, and then go and then use this disguise, which is like the skeleton key for this entire mission, to go get to go get your targets alone and then escape. Right. Mm-hmm. And I escaped in a helicopter.
And yes, you do.
Yeah. And each step of these kind of like points you to the next one. So it's like it's like preset paths through these missions that, at least on the difficulty that I was playing on, felt a little too on rails to me, actually, compared to something like Blood Money, where it felt a little bit more possible to suss out exactly what you needed to do, mainly, I think, because those levels were less crowded and it was more apparent, mm-hmm. like, what part of this was the functional gameplay geometry. So mm-hmm. I felt a little bit indignant having those training wheels on, even though the situations that it put me in, they were by no means easy to deal with. They were very creative and very well put together. I just couldn't help but think how wonderful it would have been to stumble on those with just a little bit more time, which is still an option. You can work without these opportunities. You get more score if you do so. But yeah, I guess that is just something I need to get over, which is them having this accessibility thing in here, which makes the game possible and playable for somebody who is not playing for, you know, some number of, you know, 50 odd people on the internet.
Yeah. I think it's probably, you'd want to do it when you're not like in a pressured situation.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, maybe if viewers are more like attuned to like puzzle games or something, they might be more patient for your, you know,
yeah,
going through all the options, sure, without the hints.
Yeah. But like, it was ridiculous. Like, you open up the front doors to that, to that mansion, and like everybody is crowded into the front hall. Like, it is the most crowded video game I've seen, video game scene I've seen, outside of like maybe certain parts of Heavy Rain, like when you're in that dance club, or, I mean, I guess I had a similar observation about Absolution, right? Like, mm-hmm. you were in that kind of that fish market scene where it was just completely, yeah, crowded. You know, the streets were choked out by people.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. What's cool is, like, most of this game is interface. So you select which mission or which path you want to get into, and there are all these little challenges. So we ended by people saying, hey, go to the menu when you select your level and do like this contract or this path or whatever. And one of them was, okay, so you have to understand, they will choose which weapon and which disguise you have to use to kill a certain person. And this one, it was, hey, you need to, you know, be dressed in the standard hitman suit, and you need to kill somebody with a gigantic medieval battle axe.
Hell yeah.
This is where I started watching your stream.
That's where I started watching too, is right when you were trying to find the axe and you're like, where the hell is the axe? Like, that's when I came in.
It was a gigantic museum room that was full of all these cases, and I was walking around busting the glass open, hoping I wasn't going to be caught. Trying to follow people are saying, it's in the corner. Which corner?
There's four of them.
Yeah. But the thing is, you can't conceal this gigantic battle axe weapon. So, you know, as you're trying to move this across the mansion to get to the person that you're trying to kill, to get to your target, people are going to see it. And they put a tremendous amount of tender, loving care into making these battle axe deaths as brutal as possible. Dear God.
Okay. Look, man, what are you playing for if not the battle axe deaths?
I mean, it was cool. I'm not taking exception to it. I was just genuinely caught off guard. So, but no, it's just kind of like, oh, I'm going to like literally lodge this thing into your torso and then use my foot to, you know, to clear your body off of it, or I'm going to cleave your head in two. It was pretty nuts. And I wasn't able to get out of the room that I found the axe in. I tried it a bunch. It was ridiculous and outrageous. And the person who suggested this, I can't remember exactly who it was. I'm very sorry, because it was, you know, Twitch chat is weird. I was like, yeah, I'm sorry, I made you do the hardest mission in this level. So I'm like, okay, cool. Like, it was it's fun to fail on a stream. That is good and fun. Oh man. Yep. So that is that is what I've been into. That is cool. I've downloaded the other missions, and it's going to be a good time to go through and play around with them. I may still end up using those opportunities because they're there and they're going to show me what the geometry of these levels are. I don't know if I'm going to continue to do this on a stream, but yeah, it's been a good time. Any other questions about Hitman 2016? Okie doke. Who wants to go next?
Well, if nobody's going to talk, I'm going to go.
Yeah, go.
such deference.
Okay. All right. So, I started by playing some Guild Wars 2. I ran the Ascalonian Catacombs dungeon story mode and one of the explorable mode paths with Sam, Greg, George, and Conrad. This weekend, we're probably either going to do the other two explorable modes, or we will do the story mode for Codicus Manor, which is the next tier dungeon. So that is all we did in Guild Wars, was just do the dungeon, and that's probably what we're going to be doing the next time too, because everybody's of level, I believe, for the next one. So and then I did play a little bit more of Torment, Tides of Numenera, but I will say that I did some poking around, and I found out that while I can get rid of Rin, the little orphan that I don't want in my party, it is extremely bad for the story later on, and it didn't give specifics, the thing I was looking at, but it did basically give me the gist that, like, no, you really need to keep her in the party. So since this is my good playthrough, that pretty much means I'm stuck with her in my party, which makes me mad. But when I do an evil run through and I just, you know, do the opposite of everything I would normally do, then I will totally ditch her somewhere.
Yeah, you're gonna have her rendered into cosmic sausage.
Yeah, pretty much. But the thing is that once I found that out, and once I had played a little bit, I got mad and just stopped playing. I didn't flip a table. I just lost interest. I just lost interest because I was mad that the game wouldn't let me have, like, if I want to play optimally and see the content that I want to see on this particular round, I have to have her in my party, and I can't have a party makeup 100% of my choosing. I have to have this kid taking up one of my slots, and that made me mad. So that was a thing. So I also played a little bit of The Room. I haven't played it before. It is a room escape, as you might imagine. It is 99 cents on iOS. And
This is the one with the puzzle box, right?
Yeah, puzzle box one. So I finished the first chapter, and I am midway through the second. Like, I got through the first puzzle box. Now I'm on another puzzle box. I'm like, oh my God, what the hell is this thing? It's great. It's a lot of fun. Like, I've decided to play it when I'm chilling out in bed. So, it was one of those situations where I was going to pull up my Vita and play Steins Gate, but I had left it on snooze, and then it ran out of power.
Oh, no.
I had to go leave it on its charger, and I'm probably, like, going to unplug it from the charger and then not play for a while, and then it's going to be out of power the next time. I just need to turn it off and just leave it off. But anyway, I was going to play Steins Gate, but that fell through, so I played The Room. It kind of reminds me of Zork Nemesis, which that's the only Zork game that I played, but it kind of reminds me of that mixed with A Room Escape, because it's got all these notes about alchemical stuff and whatever. That's a thing. So that's been fun. I don't really have too much to say about it. That's about it. I mean, you know, it's a room escape where you go and try to open up puzzle boxes and learn story bits.
Yeah, you're poking at and rotating things a lot.
Pretty much it. I mean, like, yeah.
I've been very curious about it. I played the first one, like 3 years ago or something, and I've been very curious because it's a whole series now. There are like three of them.
Uh-huh.
And
yeah,
from
there's
my,
three of them.
From my understanding, mm-hmm. two and three end up being more of a kind of traditional room escape kind of thing, as opposed to mm-hmm. being about these puzzle boxes.
Yeah, and I have basically how I found it in the first place, like came across it and said, hey, I should get this, is because the Room 2 is currently on sale, at least as of right now on iOS as we record, for like 99 cents. And I was like, okay, well, the first game is, you know, like you can download it and play the first little bit for free. And then if you want it, you can buy it. And it's 99 cents. So I'm like, okay, well, for 99 cents. Let's do it.
What do you have to lose?
So, yep.
Yeah.
So, the only other thing I was playing was Dishonored 2 for Duck Spring. So, I dropped a vote to my Twitter, and 100% of the people who responded to it wanted me to continue my run on my own stream, like I said before. So, that'll be a thing I'm going to be doing. But I kind of wanted to toss it over to Ben and see what Ben thought of it, because he got to watch some of it.
Yeah. So, it seems like there's a lot of chaos. I had this on while I was playing one of the games that I'll talk about later, but yeah, I kept seeing Jella picking up bodies and throwing them into oblivion off the side of a castle. And then I like the commentary on the intro video of the droids with the knives for hands or whatever, and okay. They're talking about how like nobody's really surprised by these creatures at all. Everyone's like very accepting of them, even though they're very scary looking. But,
yeah. Yeah. And so, yeah, like I had a lot of fun, but yeah, all the comments that I make when I play games, that's typical jealous stuff that goes through my head if I'm not saying it. So, but, yeah, it was a lot of fun. I was playing 100% recklessly, and I was just like, that's reading. I don't read books. I kill fish.
So. You were playing Dishonored 2, like Doom 2016.
Yeah.
which missions were you on?
I just started a new game plus with Corvo, and I had never played Corvo before, so I had fun with his rats. Oh my god, the rat swarm is so badass. I love his rat swarm because you can sick them on people and they just go face off. It's great.
It will get rid of inconvenient bodies.
And you
well,
can
I mean,
see
like
them dying
yeah.
through walls.
I mean, like. I already got the power to, you know, like have all the bodies that I attack turn into blood flies. Mm. So when I flies and the rats going at the same time, it was like, oh, you dudes are fucked. So yeah, there was one point when I was some dudes chased me. I already talked about the beer tab incident, but there was a point when some of the watch guys were chasing me, and I'm like, I'm going to run this way now. And then I ran, and then one of the guys caught up to me and I killed one of them. And then the other one started running away. I don't remember ever having that happen before, where a guard is just like booked it in the other direction. Like, oh shit. So I chased him down and killed him too. It was wonderful.
That's a smart guard. That's what I would do as a guard.
You threw one of like the female characters off the ledge as well, who was like not even an enemy.
Yeah, well, Alexi, she was dead by then. I mean, like yeah, I was cleaning up. I wanted to jump off the. Okay, so what he's talking about is at the very beginning, you are imprisoned and you have to go climb out of one window and go into another window to get out of the room you're locked in. And I really wanted to jump off the ledge, but I couldn't because I already had done it before and the first time I played the game. And I know that it's ungratifying. There's nothing satisfying about jumping off of the thing because nothing fun happens. Like, it doesn't have any special animation. It doesn't have any special anything. It's just pretty boring. You just, like, disappear into the scenery. But I decided I was going to take all the bodies in the room next to the room I was in and chuck them off the edge. So, like, here's Alexi going, oh, you know, Lord Protector, you've got to come, whatever. And I'm like, busy. Sorry. Got to throw these bodies out the window.
Yes. tiger got to hunt. Fish got to swim.
And so, yeah, like, and then I listened to her little spiel, and then I, you know, took her dead body and threw her off, too.
No,
and then I moved on. And then I got over it, and I stopped throwing people out the window. But you know, like I'm just doing the things that Jala does, and I'm on New Game Plus. I'm not even trying to get all of the runes or the anything.
You're
to the
all
point
powerful.
That like, yeah, exactly. And so it's to the point that like Sam, when he dropped the donation during my stream, he was like, "This is the weirdest AGDQ ever. Awesome game, done quick."
Yeah.
So, like, yeah, it's pretty weird. So.
Yeah. So Jala, as my sole compatriot on the show, making a case for why Dishonored is good and worth playing, do you feel like you made any headway specifically with Ben in
My beef is not with Dishonored 2.
They're very similar.
No. Yeah.
You haven't played Dishonored 2.
Hey, look, I get to decide the weird hills I die on. All right.
Okay. All right. All right.
I take no qualm with Dishonored's bastard son. I'm not so crass as to think that carries over generations. But my qualm is with the first one only.
Okay. All right. All right.
I will reserve judgment on the second until I play it and hate it and judge it.
So are you going to go out and get Dishonored 2 right now? Are you going to come over and borrow my copy of this and play it?
Start drinking.
I've already come over and borrowed it.
Oh shit, it's gone. What happened? In its place is a single rose.
You've been invited to the bachelorette.
But I'm not ready. Yeah.
Yeah, so I did have a lot of people in the stream who were like, I haven't finished the first Dishonored yet, but now I really want to or whatnot. And so I had several people who were interested in the game after seeing me, you know, go through it recklessly. So that's a thing. But what's going to be interesting when I continue it is when I get to the Clockwork Mansion, because that's kind of like a big turned around kind of place, and to be reckless there. Okay.
I think you can pull it off. I mean, at that point you can be reckless without without conscience, because you're just killing a bunch of robots and also some customers
and everybody I can find. Yeah. So yeah, but anyway, that was fun, and a lot of people, thanks to everybody who hung out and watched it, and please continue to watch the stream whenever I start streaming it on my own channel, because here's the thing, I like playing the game, I like playing single player games just fine, but I like being social, and so my energy level when I'm streaming in the first place is going to be up when I have more people talking to me.
Yeah.
And you know, like that's when you're going to hear the best commentary. If I'm just sitting there and nobody's in the room or there's nobody's talking, I'm probably just going to be like playing the game and just zoning out and not really, you know, making the show that I will if there's people watching. So
it's so weird, because back when I was, and I'm going to continue again, I'm trying to find a regular time to do it, but back when I was doing a lot of horror streams, I would constantly say like, yeah, I'm sorry I'm not talking too much because I'm trying to figure this out, or I'm angry or whatever, and people in the chat would say, oh, you don't need to talk, we're just happy to be here. And I get very, I get very nervous about that.
We're just here to watch, Cole.
Yeah, we're just here to watch.
Well, no, the thing is that like the way that I stream and the way that you stream are extremely different, Cole.
I suppose,
and the reasons why people come to see me stream are very different from the reasons why people go see you stream.
Okay.
And you know, I really think that people are there just to see what the hell kind of stuff I'm going to pop off with commentary-wise. Ollie was not able to watch the stream live, but he was watching the archive, and he just immediately spit water when there was a point when I was injured and I'm like, I'm gonna eat this apple because I'm a hungry bitch. He just spit water. I mean, like, I don't know, just some random thing that I said that wasn't even like, you know, particularly, and it just made him laugh. So
yeah, and I'm a boring, stodgy, analytical person.
Cool. I watch you stream so that I can see you kill all your characters in, what is it, Before Dawn.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah, Until Dawn. Yeah, definitely getting through with just two people alive. The two characters I liked the most.
That's good.
Well, yeah.
The thing is, Cole, is that I like to watch you stream when I'm just relaxing and chilling out. Like, you know, there's a different feel, you know, like, and that's fine. There needs to be something different out there. And I'm not always hyper, and I'm not always like crazy destructive and whatever as I am in that particular stream for Dishonored. But, you know, like, it's a mode of playing that I do engage in, especially if there's somebody that I can entertain with it, because it makes me happy to entertain other people.
Yeah.
So,
and just by being yourself and by, you know, approaching a game and
making my normally I just think it in my head, but now you get to hear me say the things.
Yeah.
So, but and that's a thing. I would like to someday stream with you. That would be an interesting
yes,
thing
it would.
To happen. But, anyway,
what game we should stick you guys together on?
Like, I mean, it would have to be Resident Evil 6. Like, that's, there's no question about it.
There you go. Yeah.
Did you have anything else, Jala, besides Dishonored 2?
No, I already talked. Like, I didn't have, like, I played a little bit of a lot of different things, but I didn't have a lot to say about anything.
Yeah. Cool.
Can I go next?
Yes, you can.
All right, cool. I got two small ones and a big one. Small ones are Antichamber. I continued playing. I think I mentioned I started playing that last week.
Yes.
I think I'm closer to the end of the game. There was one, there was one puzzle I did have to look up, and it's a, I think it's a really great solution to the puzzle. I don't necessarily think it was telegraphed well how to do it, maybe, or I didn't know you could do what you could do. So, yeah, but then once I got past that part, I think I'm towards the end of the game. I think I've collected all the things, like all the upgrades that you need to collect to progress through the game. So I'll probably finish that game at some point. But yeah.
Any cool moments or insights or individual puzzles that you want to talk about, or are you worried about spoilers?
Mostly the spoilers. I think I don't want to give too much away, but I mean, it's definitely, I mean, I do really, the thing I really appreciate about the game is the fact that it's very, non-Euclidean, that it's, that the, you know, like the cool part of, Arkham City or Arkham, Knight or whatever is like all of this game, you know, where it's, it definitely plays with space really well. And I think that's really cool. But yeah, anyway. The other game that I played that's kind of small, the one that I watched over the weekend, is I picked up the Yogg and played that game.
Oh, nice.
Cool.
I want to give credit to whomever was playing it, but I don't have a schedule off the top of my head.
Wasn't it Murph? I thought it was Murph playing that one.
Might have been Murph. Yeah, it might have been Murph playing that one. But yeah, that was a lot of fun. I know, Cole, you said you'd played it like whenever it came out, like 2 years ago or so.
I don't know if it was when it came out. I played it without realizing it was a multiplayer game.
And I also played it.
Yeah.
I also played it at some point.
Okay.
And yes, Murph was the one who was playing the Yogg. I just looked at the schedule.
All right. Cool. Yeah. I guess so. Like, so much of that game is reliant on, like, I feel like the presentation and the style of the game, because like there's a whole lot of charm in that game where it's like you spend the week, you know, like pickpocketing people for fun, like game to finesse, you know, like. So after watching Murph play that for a little bit, I thought that was a lot of fun. So I picked it up, played around with it. I think I've gotten most of the endings or most of the things and kind of like figured out most of the permutations. But yeah, that was still a really delightful game. So I think that's definitely fun. I think I probably will force other people to play that in the future just to see what kind of choices they make.
We don't have to talk about an awful lot of specifics, but, can you talk about how cool it was to see what the Yogg actually was?
Oh, then maybe I haven't unlocked all the things in it then.
It presents itself as what it actually is. Yeah.
Okay.
It all goes to the disaster, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay. Yep. That's what it is.
Okay. All right. Okay.
Well, we can't speak in more detail because I'm afraid that your skeleton will literally jump out of your mouth.
Oh my gosh. All right. Maybe we'll talk post roll about this then.
Yeah. Well, here I'll just bleep this out. Let's put in some classical gas. Now we're back. I just wanted to make sure that I wasn't crazy and I got some kind of weird answer.
I thought you were saying okay. All right.
Yeah, don't worry.
Then I think the one thing I tried to work for is making the town drunk situation work, because I think you can only assign someone to that role and have it be a good thing if they like all their stats are buffed and they're like, I think their physique is like especially buffed.
Okay.
So I was able to get that successfully. And I think there's one role that I haven't been able to fill. It's like the successfully, but there's like a certain condition in order to do it. So
yeah. Neat.
Fun game. The last one that I have, which is the biggest one, is I picked up Event Horizon Zero Dawn 360. I have the game is 2 feet away from me, and I cannot remember the title of this game.
Zero Dawn. It makes it so you don't have to scrape a bunch of eggs off of a pan.
Yeah. That's fun. But yeah, I wanted to end this one because I figured I could segue into Dennis well. Yeah. I've played like this for maybe a good 4 to 6 hours or so. I've gotten past like the first little mission and more into the open world area. I've tried to go far in the open world area, and I've definitely found a place where I am outpaced in terms of level. But a lot of it's really cool. The machines are really cool. The world's really cool. Dennis, I took your advice when you mentioned that like the narratives just pop up all over the place, or quests pop up over the place. So deliberately ignored side quests or like talking to people so that I can focus on them later, like if I want to do that. I'm like pretty 50-50 on it. Like there's a lot of good parts to it. There's also a lot of like kind of bland parts into it. I guess, I don't know, like the narrative and the characters, I don't really care too much about yet, at least, but maybe that'll grow on me later.
Can you give some better indication of where you are? Well, sure. Let me ask you this. Have you gotten to Meridian? You would know if you had.
Let's see. I've gotten to the giraffes. Let's put it that way. Does that make sense?
Giraffes. Not even remotely. You've gotten to the giraffes?
Yeah.
Oh God, you are like not even out of the beginning. Yeah, no, you got a long way to go.
Okay.
Yeah, you little child.
How dare you come before me? This piddling tale. I don't know. I don't know. So, I mean, again, it's like kind of 50-50. Some of the culture and the lore is like kind of interesting. Like, as you mentioned before, like the idea is this is civilization like way in the future, but like some stuff still exists. Like there's advanced machines, but then a lot of stuff doesn't exist. And so there's like a lot of like dead society, kind of like Fallout, but there's no nuclear blast, just kind of grass and overdrawn or whatever. But then the culture of like the people is very tribal, you know? So there's like been something that's like lost, and then they're kind of like repeating evolution, I guess. So like you're in this weird situation where it's like all of the people that you know is this like old tribal culture, but then there's these artifacts around that are like more technologically advanced than current like technology for us. So like it's kind of like a weird your character's in the center of these two different worlds. I mean, that aesthetic can be pulled off, and certain times it can be really cool. And then other times, I feel like some of the characters are a little hokey and flat, maybe. I don't know. But yeah, I mean, it's kind of like the same narrative that everyone else is saying. Like, fighting the machines is really cool. Setting up traps is cool. The upgrade system. Maybe we can talk about the upgrade system. So yeah. The upgrade system, it's similar to like the Batman upgrade systems, and similar to like the Shadow of Mordor upgrade systems, where it's like, from the outset, you can upgrade anything you want to. It's just that each level you get a certain number of points, and then you spend those points to go down certain branches, and then the branches will be like linearly increasing and how many points you need to spend in order to unlock the next notch. I have a huge qualm with this type of upgrade system, because basically what it means is you upgrade the things that you want to do first, and then you're stuck with a bunch of garbage in the second half of the game, where it's like, oh, this is all a bunch of stuff I don't really want. I guess I'll unlock it, but
I'll go a step further railing on this, and it's probably my own fault, but I didn't realize that the upgrade trees are not straight lines. So basically there's a grid of like what do you want to call it? Like 8x5.
Yeah, I made this mistake as well, and I think this is the game's fault and not your fault.
Okay.
They present a bunch of nodes in a rectangular position. So yeah, it might be like 3x8 or 4x8 or something like that. But in between the nodes, there's actually pathways, like saying like certain trees that you can go down. So like even though some of the skills, or like the majority of the skills, it's just a straight line down. So like you have, you know, like a 3 or 4 tier upgrade system. But then some of them you need to upgrade 2 nodes to the left, and then that will branch over, and then you can upgrade to one on a different branch. And so I wasted points in like this critical strike move because I wanted to upgrade like, I think the like doubling your arrow or tripling your arrow. So yeah, that was a point of frustration for me as well.
Yeah, it's really hard to describe without visuals, but basically, yeah, it presents in a rectangular grid as if you could start at the top of the rectangle and work your way straight down on every single upgrade path. But in reality, the lines fork so that there's like, to get to the bottom of one straight line, you actually have to start one column over, go partway down, then go sideways, then go down again. It's totally able to miss. There was one point where like you were talking about, there was one skill that I was like, okay, I'm realizing that this skill is going to be really important. And even though everything else in this entire section of skills is useless to me, I don't care about, I want to start filling this in so I can get that one skill. And I started filling in the wrong skill tree for it. So not only did I waste points in an area that I didn't care about, but I wasted points in the wrong area of the area that I didn't care about. So,
yep.
Wow.
Ugh. Yeah, and then at that point, it's like, well, I want to get some of this other cool shit. Like, do I keep on, like, it's sunk cost fallacy. Do I keep on throwing skill points at this or... So be warned. That is definitely frustrating.
Yeah.
It would be like, so easy to fix too.
Yeah. They could redesign it so that you actually see what you're upgrading. I feel like this upgrading system is like far inferior towards like upgrading like attributes like your strength or like your ability to hack machines or something like that. Like, I don't know why they don't like give you that control to like upgrade those stats instead. But
is there any kind of respec? Because like some kind of pressure release valve of making choices that they give you imperfect information about the consequences of feels odd to me.
Yeah. I haven't seen it yet. Yeah. I would disagree with you that it would be better to like, vaguely upgrade strength. One thing that I think is really good about the upgrade tree is that it gives you new verbs, not just better versions of stuff you already have.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Yeah. Maybe like a D&D like attributes and feat system might be a good middle ground. I guess I'm thinking in terms of like Knights of the Old Republic where, I don't know, like I value like how you can upgrade attributes and then like skill points and things and like tinker with that.
Sure, and, like, sure.
You don't have to make like, because I feel like the problem with a system like this is like, there will be like maybe a handful of like really cool and interesting like feats or something, but because they need to make like enough choices, there's like a lot of ones that are just like not that interesting and don't really do a whole lot, and they're things that you're just going to ignore, and then you run into the problem of when you get to the end of the game, well, you have to get those things because there's nothing left to get, and so like there's not like the further along you go in the game, the less interesting it gets, and that's like the opposite of what you want out of game design, you know.
It's interesting though, because I don't think the focus is the upgrade tree, and I would say like the further you get into the game, the longer it takes to get a level, which means the longer it takes to get a skill point, and so you're upgrading less and less often. But they front load the cool new verbs so that, you know, when you are leveling quickly, it is giving you cool, meaningful new shit. And then when you get to that later point where it becomes less of the focus, there's nothing hidden. Except for that one skill that I wanted, nothing hidden at the bottom of a skill tree that's going to feel like it's going to make or break your ability to play the game.
Right.
Yeah.
I don't know. Cool. I'm glad that you're playing it though.
Yeah, I'll probably stick with it. I'll probably keep playing it over the weekends. Definitely the world's cool, and definitely the fighting's fun, and like, the side missions are kind of 50-50. Some of them are kind of interesting. Some of them are. The writing is just kind of weird. Like, I don't know. Like,
weird.
There's
how?
There's this one mission where you're trying to find a sister's brother or something, and you like climb this like rock face to like confront him or something after tracking him, and then his sister just shows up on the top of the rock face. It's like, well, that doesn't make sense. And then, you know, like, she, you know, like, they throw it away with a line like, oh yes, I followed you here and stuff. And it's like, okay, I can kind of buy that, but it's like, you know, it's, there's a little bit of hokiness in there, but yeah.
Yeah, that goes to the thought that I kind of put out earlier, which is it feels like the main quest line got their A team and all the side quests got their B team, which if I had to choose, that's the way I would order it. But I'd rather both feel like they got the A team.
Yeah.
From an animation standpoint, but then two, just from a storytelling standpoint. What I will pile on top, I don't think I have a ton extra say about it this week. Is that I got to Meridian, which is like one of the main cities in the game. And that introduced a lot of characters and a lot of story that just feels really, really good. Like the political intrigue going on is like really believable and actually intriguing. Go figure. The characters at the center of it feel, you know, genuine and like I feel invested in their stories, and the animations for those characters are significantly better than some of the stuff I've gotten in the side quests. So maybe that can be my encouragement to you is get to Meridian.
Okay.
I think there's a lot of good stuff that unlocks there.
What level is your character?
26-ish.
Okay.
But that's the other thing I have to say, which is I have been dawdling hardcore in this game. Like I'm enjoying it so much that I almost don't want to do main story quests because I just want to inhabit this world for longer. Mm-hmm. And so it's one of those things where like I'll just run around and do random shit and maybe take on a side quest here and there until I'm like, okay, this is stupid. Like, go do a main quest. And I'll do it and I'll be like, oh, that was awesome. Like, so good. Okay, I got to do some other random shit before I do the next one. Like, I'm dragging it out so much that I'm not really sure how close I am to the end of the game. It feels like there's a bunch of, you know, it feels like I'm midway, maybe like 50%. But who knows? But I'm just having so much fun inhabiting the world, which is like, it's the highest praise I can give an open world game, right?
Right.
Yeah, so continuing to enjoy that, and then not much else to add. It's I'm excited to continue to compare and contrast with you, Ben.
Okay.
Yeah.
Cool. What else have you been playing?
Yeah, we can transition over.
Yeah,
I'll do some quick hits, and then I'll dive in a little bit deeper on some games. I've been continuing to play The Inner World, which is good because last time I talked about it, I did not get to do it with Jala on, so we can compare notes. So it's funny, I was talking about that tightrope of, hey, I've been sequestered away from the world and now I'm like super innocent and everything is amazing and wondrous and like I'm just so innocent. That's very much Robert's character in The Inner World. And they do it, but it's intentional for like comedic effect, and that's done well. So Robert's character, the main character of this game, or at least for most of it, completely carries this. Like, he's just so funny and so innocent, and all this, it's just really fun to play around him. The other kind of like co-lead, Laura, is more of like the jaded, cynical character, and I can't put my finger on exactly what it is, but she's not nearly as enjoyable to play as.
She's not.
Yeah, I hate to do this, but I honestly think it chalks up to a translation thing. I think the game was originally made in German and they translated it over to English. And she's very much the kind of person that has like a sharp comeback for everything and like is just very snarky. But because it's translated, I think some of the wittiness gets dropped or some of it doesn't quite come through. And then also just the timing feels a little bit off because like it's got the anime thing where the amount of time the character spends moving their lips doesn't necessarily line up to the amount of time they spend talking, which is unfortunate. So I think she as a character is more dependent on that, you know, whip smart timing, whereas Robert is a little more kind of happy-go-lucky and can get away with having it be a little more sloppy. So That's the only complaint I have, though. The world continues to be very charming and the puzzles continue to be fun. Still playing it with Jen, both of us just sitting on the couch and puzzling together. And we've made liberal use of the hint system so that we never stay stuck for too long.
That's good.
But yeah, it's never felt unfair. There's a couple things where, like, you know, you grab a skull off of a skeleton, great, that gets you an item. But you had to notice that once you grabbed the skull, there were now a bunch of flies swarming around where the skull was. And those were, like, an element of a puzzle, too. So it's not particularly egregious, you know, adventure game bullshit, but it is there, as it is in every adventure game.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, but, so whereabouts are you right now?
We just found the wind fountain in the woods.
Ah, okay. So you've met Gorf.
Oh, we've met Gorf and Gorfalina.
Yay, Gorfalina and Gorf are great.
Yeah, so that's good stuff. I just clapped. I don't know why. For the two new games that I've played, I've played Little Big Planet 3. Also did that one co-op. And that has been really interesting. So has anyone here actually played Little Big Planet 3?
No, I made sure to claim my copy of it because it was free on PS yep. Plus. Yeah.
Yep, yep. Okay, yeah. You guys, has anyone here played the other Little Big Planet games?
Only with you.
The first one. Yeah.
First one? Okay, yeah, that's right. Okay, good. So there's like a lot to commend on this version of it and a lot to disparage. Like, at its core, this is a platform for making games. Like, right. Really, that's what Little Big Planet has aspired to be, is, like, the most accessible game creation studio out there. Or, you know, the piece of software out there for making games. And they've steadily ramped up the complexity of what you can do with the creator. And, you know, the devs do every level that's packaged with the game using the same creation tools that are available to the people who own the game. And then there's just a massive amount of community created levels that you can go play. And I think they've kind of reached the intersection where it's starting to show a little bit that, like, hey, the devs could have done better with better tools.
Okay.
Just to the point where, like, they've made it so complex and so much, like, that you can do anything with it, which is great. Like, you want to keep on giving people more options and stuff like that. But at this point, it's like, well, then, you know, if you're going to have this level of complexity, you might want to switch over to using an actual game creation studio
or right.
piece of software. So, you know, it's still way more accessible than anything out there, but it is starting to be, it's like the uncanny valley of dev kits.
Like you can see the seams, which you always could, because it had kind of this material, like they obfuscated some of the weird, kind of inadequacies of their graphical engine by making it this, you know, faux material style.
Yeah. Right?
Yeah.
Well, yeah, I see some of the seams. No, it's like it started out in like one as like a really good platformer creation engine. So if you wanted to do like a 2D platformer with some physics elements, this was like perfect for that. And then two kind of expanded out to where like you could do a bunch of creative stuff with like logic circuits and more connecting levels and more complexity, but still right. ultimately close to the the two, you know, the core of it was still the 2D platformer. And now with 3, I think they've been like, you can do anything. You can do an RPG. You can do a 3D shooter. You can do a racing game. Like, and you can, and people have, and it's incredible.
But it's like,
it's almost like, go learn something. Go learn an actual development platform.
But like, are they also doing that for themselves? Because like a lot of that stuff, a lot of the genre bending, like we're going to make this into a shoot 'em up kind of thing, was people explicitly exploiting the way that the physics in that game worked, or you know working with the small amount of you know, just kind of customization that it allowed to do crazy things like remake Final Fantasy VII in Little Big Planet.
Yeah, so here's the unfortunate part, because I'm going to start this by saying I really do think it's an incredibly powerful and accessible creation tool, and I love what they're doing with it. The one level that we played that was like explicitly, hey, we're going to do a different genre, was like, hey, you're going to build a car and then you're going to race it. And it was straight up broken. Like, we could build the car and then we could step into the door where it was supposed to like put you onto the racetrack and nothing would happen.
Mm-hmm. And this was official official content that they made for the shipped game?
Yeah, official early content. Like, it wasn't even like buried at the back of the game where they ran out of time. This was like maybe the second or third bonus level that you had access to. So that felt disappointing. It's like it just straight up didn't work. That said, all the other levels that we've done that are platforming centric are incredible. Like, that is what this team does really, really well. And the fact that they built it with tools that they then made available to everyone is incredible, because the stuff that they've done is so high quality.
Yeah.
And they have done some cool stuff with one of the levels, your character gets turned into like a flock of your character. Like, you jump into a meat grinder and then it pops out like 8 versions of you.
Oh, that's horrifying.
It's very cutely horrifying, because that's what Little Big Planet does.
Right.
But then the challenge is, like, you're controlling all these characters with just the left stick, and you have to platform to the end of the level, keeping at least like 75% of them alive. But they, you know, so like if one falls off a ledge and the others make the jump, you now have to figure out how to get that one person back, knowing that any inputs you give also affect the ones that made the jump. So there's a bunch of little like cute conventions around like trying to get everyone to group up and then getting them to move together. So that creativity within the 2D platformer genre worked really, really well. It's just the one time they tried to go outside that so far in the game, it didn't work.
Yeah.
It might work later on in the game. They also added some stuff around like almost like a quest format, so that you can have like levels within levels. That works really well. Like, that's cool.
Yeah.
So it feels like they've not just found the edge of their comfort zone. They've found the edge of their capability zone, and that feels so harsh to say, but. But it's true, which, you know, maybe that's where you want a team to be, especially in a game like this. Like, you want them pushing their boundaries, and it's so maybe spin it positively and say like they've really found the edge of you know what they're able to do, and they're really kind of pushing themselves.
I mean,
which is fine.
The logical next question is, like, did you seek out any like highly rated user content to see how that stacked up?
No, not yet, unfortunately. So that's the one blind spot is we've done only single player content. I think eventually I'll dip my foot into it. If it's anything like the previous two games, user created content is overwhelmingly single player.
Yeah.
Like, very little of it is designed with two players at all in mind. And that's something that the main content does very well, is you can play through a level by yourself or with multiple characters, and it works just as well.
Yeah.
The creativity is also still really good. Just like the theming that they have and the characters that they have are all just, it's clear that this team delights in being creative, not delights in just being random. But in just really weird and interesting infusions of different genres and design themes and stuff like that. So that works for me.
Nice. Yeah. Well, I mean, like, if custom stuff doesn't accommodate the way that you are playing it, like,
yeah, exactly.
You know, like, you playing this with Jenna is an important thing, you know?
Yeah. The one major positive that I'll end on, because I've liked my time with this game so far, is that they've incorporated the creation system into the main game system. So there's now a pickup that you can put into levels that effectively gives you a poppet, which is like your little tool that you use for creation in the level.
It's your little
designer.
Cursor.
Yeah, your little cursor.
Your way out of the level.
Exactly, yeah. Which, how brilliant is that, and how elegant is that? That now you've got, if there was someone that purely bought this, you know, as a platformer, not caring, and it's a great platformer in its own right, but not caring about all the creation stuff, now there's this just kind of gentle introduction to the creation mechanics baked into the levels that they're playing, to the point that I think, and again, I've seen it only once or twice, but that I can see that very, very naturally leading you into feeling competent enough to dive into level creation. Whereas in the previous two games, it felt like a bit of a wall. Like, the two felt very separate, and yes, they were made with the same tools and engine and everything, but it's just really, really cool that they're incorporating into the main game like that.
Nice.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's Little Big Planet 3.
Have you played around with the creation stuff? Because I love the sequencer that they put in those games.
No. It just not beyond the creation stuff that's been in the levels.
Yeah.
But cool. I can only, that's the cool thing is, you know, they've got a solid engine in Little Big Planet 2, and they only got to build on it for 3. And I can only imagine how good and how expansive it's gotten.
Cool. Mm-hmm. Awesome. Well, did you play anything else?
I think that's all I'll talk about this week. Okay. Because that was pretty meaty.
Yeah. We talked about a shitload of games.
You should play games this week, right? Guys.
Yeah.
I'm so glad. I played Disc Jam more. Disc Jam is awesome. And played, yeah, there's, I gotta, you know what I gotta do is I gotta store up my reserves for when I have a crazy week.
And
fall back on stuff.
That's what I used to do back when David was on more. So whenever he's back on more, I will be doing that. And then I'll be like, so guys, these are the ones I'll talk about now.
Yeah. There's so many good games to play.
Yeah. Just keep it in your pocket.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Cool. Well, do you all want to button it up?
Button.
Please.
Well, thank you everybody for tuning in for this episode of The Level. This is level 189 coming up on 200, like it's our job, but we're so grateful that you took the time, that you listened. Hopefully you laughed. That's what we like making you happy. Thank you to everybody who either watched, donated, or participated in Duck Spring over this past week. Or past weekend, it was like 4 days that people did this.
Yeah,
crazy
yeah,
thing.
Ridiculous.
It was so long, so huge, so many people. I hope it doesn't feel disingenuous to say thank you. I had almost nothing to do with it aside from those 3 hours. Like, just it was tremendous to see all of the interest. I was getting the email notifications about all of the donations that came through. They were keeping me up at night. It was hell. But I'm so happy that you did it. Yeah. But for this show, you know, the usual stuff. Patreon, iTunes, ratings and reviews, and telling your friends. That is how we grow. That is how we sustain. That is our life, is you guys saying, hey, I know some friends that you might want to welcome into your life. You know, there are 5 of them. They're great. We like them. But other than that, you can find me. I'm Cole Ross, at Cole Ross on Twitter.
I'm Dennis Furia, at D Furia on Twitter.
I'm Jalachan in Places.
I'm Ben Merkel at Merkelizer on Twitter.
And stick around for some titles. Okay, what do we have? What do we have?
I only have a few.
Okay.
Brownness scale.
Ooh. Okay.
Lived fast and died prehistorically.
Okay.
Noted serial killer and dab expert.
I have that, but I just have serial killer and dab expert, not noted.
Yeah.
I have noted serial killer and dab expert.
Well, I am outvoted. So let us put that here. That has 2 votes. Okay. What
else do you have, Jala? And the last one that I have is activism.
Okay.
Nice.
I have mostly the same. The only one I had differently was Sisters Act 4, Get Rectory.
Yes.
Okay. What were the ones that you repeated, Ben? So I know which ones to put stars.
Noted serial killer and dab expert, and live fast and die prehistorically.
Okay.
I'll give a shout out to Brownout.
Okay.
Yeah.
One second here. Okay. Dennis, what you got?
I had Impossible to Play as Me.
Okay. What was that from?
That was where, I forget what game we were talking about, but it was, I said it was impossible to play, and you're like, it's impossible to play as me.
Oh, yeah. They're talking about streaming Hitman. Okay, there we go.
There we go. It came across better in the verbalization. I had a word picture of dabbing, but I like noted dabber and serial killer or whatever the...
Okay.
Was already said, so chalk me up as a third vote for that. Right. I, too, had Sister Act 4, Get Rectory.
Okay.
That one, and I think that one has to be my favorite. Yeah. I also had Hitman. So Hitman.
Yeah.
Okay.
And then I wrote Unlock Story Bits, which I don't even know what that was in reference to.
I'll write it down.
Yeah.
Okay. So let's see here. I had 3. I had Kill Him Back, referring, I think, to Jala being the true killer, the true serial killer.
Yeah.
Yeah. I also had noted serial killer and dab expert. And then I also had, Dennis, something funny you said, the weird hills I die on.
Yeah, I was thinking something like that, but I didn't know exactly how to phrase that right.
I will choose the weird hills I die on.
What's yeah. that?
I will choose the weird hills I die on.
Yeah. Yeah. So the most votes by and far is noted serial killer and dab expert.
It was hilarious. I'm sorry.
I'm and so sad that came on the same week as Sister Act 4, Get Rector.
it's a fun bit. I like noted serial killer and dab expert because it talks about Duckstream stuff. Or Duckspring, mm-hmm. rather. I would like the Sister Act stuff to be a surprise for people.
Sure, sure. Yeah. Oh, so good. This was like a fantastic week. I don't know. This week felt incredibly good.
Well, and then too, the dab thing also, like I said before, also references the Monster in My Podcast discussion of dabbing.
Ah, so. Perfect. Yeah.
I forgot who I described that to. I thought I would, for about three, because we record those in batches a long time ago, I thought that I was, in my mind, I thought that I was describing dabbing to Chris, which would be a very, which would be a very different.
Yeah.
Yeah. Cool. Yeah, well, I'm gonna go to bed because I'm very tired. Jala, I know that you're very tired as well. Yeah. Dennis, we're having Chipotle catered in. They bring in pre-made burritos if you want to come up.
I might be down for that.
Okay, text me.
I will. Thanks for the invite.
Cool.
Ben, the dinner list or the lunch list will go off.
I'm sure burrito-less.
Oh, you're going to be burrito-less in fucking Austin? Come on, come on.
No, I'm going to Oklahoma tomorrow.
Oh shit, it's yeah.
Far.
I'll be so far away from my taco comfort zone.
Oh gosh.
Oh man, I have a lunch meeting tomorrow that I know there's lunch being ordered in for. So.
Womp womp. Whoop. I just wanted to extend that anyway. That's fine. I know.
Appreciate it.
Yeah. Cool. All right. Well, good night, everybody. Take care. This was a lot of fun. I hope you have a good night.
I actually wave my hands, by the way, when we say goodbye. I don't know if you
guys did that. Not that anybody sees me.
Yeah, but I appreciate it anyway. Even though I don't see it, I appreciate it.
All right. See you guys.
Take care. Bye.
Yeah.
Bye-bye.